Fastamai, good evening and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, could domestic rates be based on the size of your home rather than its rentable value? A consultation is launched on this proposal by the Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas. And demolition work will soon begin in Braddon to make way for the construction of 30 new public sector homes in a scheme that's expected to cost around £4.5 million. The island's policy and reform minister is proposing that domestic rates be calculated on the size of your property rather than its rental value. Chris Thomas launched a consultation yesterday on a review and modernisation of the annual charge, which is levied to pay for local services. Currently, homeowners pay their rates based on the rental value of their property, although an island-wide valuation hasn't been undertaken since 1969. This has led to disparity in the system, with properties of different ages and locations costing different sums despite their current value. Minister Thomas argues this situation is out of date and unfair, and says the solution he's brought forward and his team is easier and cheaper than reassessing property values with surveyors. In this consultation, he's proposed that rates are based on the size in square metres of all the floors in a building, calculated using aerial photographs. I asked Mr. Thomas and officers Adam Smith and Claire Watterson to explain this new assessment method.
21 important questions about an issue that's been troubling the Manx public, so many of us, for decades probably, and certainly it's been a very hot issue over my entire time in politics. 2013, as a new MHK, I picked up a petition that had been sitting there since 2009 from David Buttery about the inequity in the rates valuation system and how we collect rates for local services. I chaired a committee, Alf Cannon was a member of that committee, Brenda Cannon was a third member. We came up with some recommendations. Treasury worked on it, even took a motion to Tim Wood to fund from reserves a project to modernise rates. And then at the end of the last administration, it was knocked on the head for the next administration. I think that was Mr. Tears' exact words. So many challenges have been taken up by this government. And one of them is rates modernisation. I'm feeling good about this. I reckon we can make some good progress in the next 2 years to put together a system that's efficient, so therefore it can happen, and is also fair and equitable for ratepayers around the island. Obviously, there will be winners and there will be losers. The winners will keep quiet, the losers will complain. And you know, that's where we are, and that's where politicians before me have been. And I genuinely this time got a good team put together just before Christmas, working on it intensively. And we really do hope with this consultation, and with the stakeholder engagement that we've got going around it, we can put together the basics of policy changes and decisions.
If there are going to be winners and losers, some might say, what's the point?
Yeah, well, and that is the point. The point is this is about fairness. And the issue that Mr. Tear had probably was that what was the point of spending £2 million to collect the same amount of money?
He was obliged by a Tim Wood decision to spend that, wasn't he?
It was a Tim Wood resolution, but no Tim Wood resolution is anything more than declaratory. I mean, I think it's embarrassing for government if they don't eventually implement Tim Wood decisions, but he put it off to the next administration, and that's what we're trying to do. We put it in the programme for government that we would modernise rates. It wasn't quite the pressing challenge that things like public sector pensions and making the local economy work and various other things were, but we've got to it, applying resource to it. We've got a good proposal for using aerial photographs and a computer software programme which can help the Manx public, help us get a new system that's up to date, that we perceive is fair, that can then be used continuously to maintain a rateable value database without taking money, more money off the Manx public. This is not a stealth tax. This is about raising public revenue around the island more fairly.
What are we talking here? Drones, aeroplanes, how does this work? You fly over a property, you look at its area, you do a valuation based on the area. Can you just explain how that sort of works? Well, I think many will be intrigued to see how that's possible.
Yeah, well, we have a mapping system that's on quite a few officers' computers, used for different purposes, for planning, for environment, all sorts of people use it. we have aerial photographs, they're to a certain specification. There's precedent for this system being used in Guernsey, for instance, 10 years ago. In actual fact, there was a local software company that was heavily involved in the Guernsey process. It's not experimental. You can basically use several pictures to work out, and pictures of where the windows are, whether they've got skylights, how many floors there are. And you can tell all of that from the air, and then it's corroborated with other information that's available to government. So people worry about, will they notice a basement? Will they know whether it's divided into flats, that building? And the answer is yes, we can have other data to tell us that, because we have that already from the rates database, because you pay rates per property, not per building. And, you know, we have other databases as well that tell you about using basements for things.
When was the political decision made to go for the property's size rather than its value?
So what we're doing now is we are consulting on the decision that this would be a workable way of going.
Well, you only have one question on the actual change in the method of assessment, though.
Yeah, because I want to make progress. So we've got 21 questions. It's quite a long consultation.
You want to make progress, but you haven't actually asked initially whether people accept the proposition that we should base it on area rather than value.
The Manx public is smart. You know, they know if a process can be done efficiently, they'll choose the efficient process.
But it might not be more fair.
Well, there is one aspect of fairness is whether people who have square meters in their property that's worth more pay more for that square meter. And we've asked a question about that. We've also asked other questions about the square meters. But, you know, we can't consult on everything. I could have done a really loose consultation and said, do you want local income tax? Do you want a poll tax? All those sorts of things. But if I was, that would have meant the Manx public should have seen me as a politician that didn't really want to make progress on it. It wanted to talk in generalities. What we want to do is we want to put together a practical proposition that will work and ask the Manx public, is it a good practical proposition? Once we've got the responses from them, once we've been out to the local authorities, we've talked to the MUA, we've talked to surveyors, we've talked to charities, other people who are engaged and need to be engaged, we will go to Tim Ward in June with an amendable motion, to use Brexit speak, about this future proposition. And I hope that we'll have a clear political decision on which legislation can then be drafted for next year, and on which the smart service framework or another digital programme can actually be used to put together the software for the next few years, for transition over 5 or 6 years, but with decisions made now, so the decision becomes an implementable one.
So it was £2 million, I believe, touted to do the re-evaluation, as was it back then. What's the figure to do this aerial assessment?
Well, we're not going to preempt any decision, so we've just got, you know, indicative estimates from conversations with other people. In Guernsey, I think we're pretty certain they spent around £500,000 from public information.
That's it's available. A big saving on what would have been.
It's a quarter of it, and obviously that won't be the same price now, but £2 million was never estimated. I think it was just chosen as a large number that Tim will be a bit frightened of. Some people have said that anyway. I don't know. I can't speak for Mr. Tier and all of that. But you know, what we want to do is we want to make some political decisions, then we want to move forward. There's no point tackling a political issue if you don't want to make progress on it. This is a workable way. I'm very, very pleased with the project officers we've got working on it, and perhaps you can talk to them in a moment, but also on the cross-government working group that we've involved people from Treasury who are responsible for rates collection. Cabinet Office have taken this lead on rates policy, which is hence my involvement. We've talked to Infrastructure Department, Local Government Unit, and various other parts of infrastructure about property issues. We've got the Department for Enterprise involved, cross-government. We're now going cross-Manx public, and I really do hope the June Tim Ward debate can be paramount in moving forward on an important issue of rates modernisation.
I'll have to keep you on the political just for a bit longer.
Mr.
Hooper did mention the consultation in 2015. You said you didn't want to do a wide-reaching consultation with this package of measures, but one was held in 2015 and the majority of respondents weren't in favour of this. Are you just re-asking the same question to get the response you want?
And no, that's wrong. But what you have to remember is a consultation isn't an opinion poll, and it certainly isn't a referendum. What we want is we want to provide extra information about how this would work, what it would cost, what it would deliver, who might win, who might lose.
Despite the people in 2015 saying they didn't want it.
The basis on which we've made that decision is that, you know, at that time, Mr. Tears and Treasury's preferred solution was banded capital values. There was lots of explanation of that. Then there was just thrown in as a nod to the idea I had in mind, because I knew quite a lot about Guernsey and in the select committee, was that this would work. Mr. Tear was never persuaded, so it was a biased question then. That's my assertion. We're trying to make this practical. Of course it's on the table, and I'm sure you'll be speaking to Laurie, Honourable Member for Ramsey, and I'm sure this debate will be going on for the next couple of months, and I encourage that. This is an important decision that needs to be taken after everybody involved has been involved.
Local authority reform wasn't packaged in with this. Why was that? Was it considered too daunting a task to have both on the agenda at the same time, despite the fact they are intrinsically linked?
Like all good Manx radio journalists, you've answered your own question. No, only teasing you there, Ewan. Local authority reform is hugely important as well. I was responsible for local authority reform in part a few years ago. It's happening to an extent, incrementally. You have to break decisions or issues into manageable parts to make progress on them. And this is about rateable value. It's not about how we deliver waste services or how we deliver housing services or how we...
But decisions on how those services are allocated are based on rates increase. Income, which is impacted by rates.
Very much. So they're connected decisions, but this is limited to the rateable value and revaluation. Mm-hmm. Thereafter, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the local authority reform issue doesn't raise its head again. And, you know, the last government had it in their agenda for change that they were going to reform local authorities. They failed. We didn't make a pledge in that, but decisions that have been made in respect of data protection, freedom of information, which all apply to local authorities. Yeah. The Tim Wood Commissioner for Administration will be there for local authorities in the next couple of years. That's another area in my portfolio. All these things add up with rates reform, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the positive progress that was made in Garth, and I hear is being made in other parts of the island now, doesn't continue, and local authority reform is seen to be something that people in the island want, and we've got to do the best by the ratepayers as well as by the taxpayers, and it'll happen eventually.
This might be a bit of a far-reaching question, but is it envisaged that following the re-evaluations there would be a period of transition for local authorities to adjust?
Yeah, very much so. I don't want to preempt the question, but we've asked a question to get that answer, and I personally would be surprised if people didn't think there should be a transition. I mean, the Garth local authority reform is not directly connected, but that had a transition period, including the rates paid. That's not the rate of value, but the rates paid, and Onken did when the district and the village did. I've never looked back at Michael in the 80s, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Michael didn't have a transition as well.
And were local authorities, I believe, involved in workshops on this issue?
They will be involved. We're running a series of workshops in the next couple of weeks to get them involved. They've all been invited, and they'll all be able to voice their opinions outside of the consultation as well. They'll be welcome to respond to the consultation as well.
And as officers, what were the principles that guided how you approached this issue?
We believe that the system going forward should be based on a number of principles, so that it should be easily understandable, it should be fair, it should be enabled by technology as the world's moving forward, it should be cheaper to maintain going forward with ongoing revaluations than the current system is. So these were at the heart of looking at the methods available, which is one of the reasons why we went down the area route with the lack of subjectivity. A property has a certain size regardless, whereas market values and capital values in other areas are maybe slightly more subjective. So we'll have to see what people think.
And was the benefit of Ariel being that you could reevaluate on a more regular basis?
So you can, along with our colleagues in planning, we can keep it up to date on an almost weekly basis rather than having to wait 5 or 10 years, or in this case, a number of decades. So it's possible to keep it up to date almost on a regular weekly basis.
So if I were to own a house and consider a sizable extension, then I would be reevaluated through planning? Would that be how it would work?
So the way we potentially envisage it working is that you would obviously have to notify planning of that, and therefore that would then feed through to the rate system that would say there has been an extension here that's X amount of square metres, and therefore we would change the rateable value based on that.
Members of the Rates Modernisation Team Adam Smith, Claire Watterson and Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas there. Well, in 2015, a separate consultation asked the public if they supported an area-based model for rates assessment, in which 71% of respondents said no. And that year, Tynwald also resolved to spend £2 million on a traditional revaluation using surveyors, though seemingly that commitment has been shelved. Ramsey MHK Laurie Hooper has called this latest consultation an absolute sham. He claims Mr Thomas has ignored the will of the public and of Tynwald, as he explained.
So the consultation's gone live already. It went live about an hour ago, I think. So I saw it go live, thought this would be good before the presentation, have a quick flick through it myself. And it seems that in 2015, one of the questions that was asked the last time they consulted was, should we move to an area-based model? And the public, resoundingly, 71% of responses, no, we shouldn't. public didn't want that, absolutely clear. And yet this time they've decided to do it. But there's nowhere in the consultation is that made particularly clear. There's one very short paragraph in there that says this is how rates are currently calculated and this is how they will be calculated going forward. It's not an option. This is how they're going to do it. It's not a single question in this consultation about whether or not that's appropriate. It's not made abundantly clear anywhere in the consultation itself. You have to open one of the fact sheets hidden inside to actually get an understanding of what they're proposing. So I have no idea why the public resoundingly rejected this option the last time they were asked. I've no idea why these guys are just carrying on and saying, well, let's barrel ahead and do this anyway, even though it's something the Manx public clearly don't want.
But the consultation in 2015 wasn't by any means a referendum on this subject, and the minister, I suppose, does have to show some leadership, and it's widely accepted that the reform has been needed for about 40, 50 years, a long time, so you can see why he's taking this forward.
I don't disagree with any of that, except they consulted in 2015, they came up with a model that people were broadly okay with, they took that to Tim Wall said, that's great, Tim Wall then approved £2 million funding to get the revaluation done, and nothing's happened. The minister's job, really, is to take that Tim Wall decision that's already been made, that consultation the public have already answered, and implement it, do the job he's been asked to do and been told to do already by Tim Wall and by the Manx public. Instead of doing that, he's decided he doesn't like any of that, he doesn't like the view the Manx public expressed, he doesn't like the view that Tim Wall has expressed, he's going back to basics and he's doing something that has already been resoundingly rejected. And what really irritates me about this consultation is he isn't even being honest about it. He's not being clear to people and saying this is the new method, making that front and centre of the consultation. It's not. There are no questions in the consultation about whether this is appropriate. He's not even bothering to ask people, what do you think of my new method? He's simply putting it down as a matter of fact, this is how it's going to happen, like it or not.
But he believes that method to be easy to administer. And at what point do you have to take an executive decision on these things and move them forward?
An executive decision was taken already.
Why was it not followed up then? I'm sure that wasn't just Mr. Minister Thomas's responsibility.
You'll have to ask the minister as to that. Tim Wall has given a very clear message. I think you have to ask the minister and the chief minister and the other ministers why they haven't taken that decision forward. That's entirely in their ballpark.
There's cost, I assume.
Of course there is, but Tim Wall approved the funding. Tim Wall approved the £2 million for the revaluation.
The £2 million couldn't be found.
I find that hard to believe. We've just had a budget where we've had money being handed out to departments. I don't understand why this wasn't done as part of that. It's a big issue, rates reform. It affects a lot of people. And the method they're proposing, like I say, it's already been consulted on and already been rejected. So what's the point asking people what they think if you're just going to ignore them when they come back and tell you something you don't want to hear?
And I suppose I should ask you, what do you think of the method?
I've got concerns about the method itself. I can understand why they want to simplify it and measuring area using drones and satellites and all that all sounds quite fancy and quite modern, that's great, but actually, is it going to be accurate, is my first question, because our land isn't all registered at the land registry, so you can't, there's no easy way of saying, well, that's definitely all belongs to the one property. You can't do that without the land registry information. So that's going to be quite difficult, I think, in the first instance. My second problem with it, actually, is if you're just basing something purely on area, then the value of your property doesn't take into account, so using area as a proxy for value, which is what they're doing, is quite basic.
And assessing the value is the costly element of the review.
Of course it is, but it's a bit fairer, because if you look at someone that's on, say someone's on a low income, they're trying to buy a first time buyer's house, you might get a larger house in Ramsey or in Peel because house prices tend to be a bit lower than they are in Douglas or in Castletown. So then you've got two people in exactly the same income category. One of them's bought a slightly larger house in Peel because that's what they want and that suits them, but they're being disadvantaged now because they've decided to live outside of one of the lower rateable areas. And that's the problem with the current system, is that it doesn't matter, it matters where you live. And if you live in Ramsey, you get rated one way. If you live in Peel, you get rated another. You live in Douglas, it's all different. And that's one of the biggest problems with the current system. And all they're looking to do with this new approach is just carry that on in under a different guise. It doesn't seem to be a fairer way of doing it, to my mind. But that's not my decision to make. The Manx public have already said they don't like this as an idea. It was overwhelming.
Local authority reform, I just wanted to get your view on whether these things should have been packaged together, because you mentioned the boundaries, the areas, that is the makeup of local authorities. Some of the boundaries are very weird and very odd and very historical. Would it not have made more sense to do local authority reform at the same time, in your view?
I think the short answer to that is yes, but I think we all live in the real world, and rates reform is more important than local authority reform, I think. And I think to try and package the two together might have been trying to do too much all at once. So yes, in a perfect world, you do them both at the same time, but I think you get the rates issue solved first, at least then you've got a fair way of collecting rates from everyone across the island, and then you can move on and deal with, actually, is our local authority structure the right one? They are very heavily interlinked, but I think one is definitely more important to people than the other, because the cost of rates actually hits you directly in the pocket, whereas whether or not you live in Braddon or Bride or Andreas or Ramsey, it doesn't really affect you too much who your local authority is, other than, of course, that the rates collection. And that's the big issue, I think.
Ramsey MHK, Laurie Hooper. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Demolition work will soon begin in Braddon to make way for the construction of 30 public sector homes in a scheme that's expected to cost around £4.5 million. The new apartments will be built over the next 18 months on the site of the old farm and former car showroom near to the Snugborough trading estate. Braddon Parish Commissioners brought the plans forward to replace the outdated properties at Cronkbourne Village and will fund the development through loans and borrowing. I asked Andrew Jessop, who's the chairman of Braddon Commissioners, to explain how this major housing development came into being.
It's a historical situation whereby the commissioners took control of Cronkbourne Village many, many years ago and ran them as social housing. However, over the last sort of 20, 30 years, large sums of money have been spent on what is effectively a registered set of buildings. And it got to the point whereby, even though the loans on the last lot of refurbishment hadn't been paid off, we were looking, facing, again, huge costs of refurbishing the properties to maintain them into a local authority standard. So a decision was made that rather than spend further money on making improvements at Cronkbourne Village, it would probably be at this time to move them on to somebody in the private sector who could then make a decision as to how much they wanted to invest. Obviously, they don't have all the bureaucracy involved which a local authority has in terms of doing capital projects. So we put the village up for sale. We got a purchaser for it, Aragon Properties. And we had been looking at the adjacent site to our housing at Snugborough, the old Snugborough farm site, which had fallen into decay and disrepair. Anyway, we managed to negotiate a purchase with the heirs of the Christians that had been living in there. And we developed a housing scheme on that plot.
How much was Cronkbourne Village taking out of the local authority to keep it at a good nick? And what was the point when you thought, now we've got to think about a different way of doing this?
Well, we were talking about anywhere between half and £1 million on this next phase of trying to address the damp issues in the properties. So again, it just didn't seem to make economic sense to the commissioners to pay that amount of money when, as I say, we were still paying off the loans on the previous works.
And did the sale of Cronkbourne Village, did funds from that go towards this development on Snugborough Farm, or at least offsetting the cost of that?
It's been used to pay off some of the other loans within the housing. So in effect, we'll be sort of paying for the new housing out of the normal sort of scheme of borrowings and repayment over a period of 30 odd years.
The new scheme, £4.5 million then. How did you decide the makeup of the scheme? So you've gone for 24 two-bed apartments and 6 one-bed apartments. So why did you choose apartments, and was the number significant? Was that what you can achieve on that sloped site? Just tell us about the design and the overall direction of the new development.
Well, as you've sort of already hinted at, there were constraints for the site in terms of the fact that it's sort of relatively long and thinnish and it's built on the top of a cliff. What we decided to do was actually run a sort of like a bit of like a competition. So we invited a number of architectural practices on the island to submit a plan for the site to maximise the use of it without over intensifying the use. And we managed to get a design that from Ellis Brown, that as commissioners we felt was the best proposal for the site.
Apartments rather than homes, was that a deliberate decision in view of maybe cutting down the waiting lists for homes at all? Or,
well, again, one of the drivers was we wanted to replace the number of units that we were losing at Cronkbourne more or less one for one. We haven't quite achieved that, but obviously houses at Cronkbourne Village are quite small anyway. So again, we needed to build the new apartments to the minimum. Well, we've tried to always do slightly better than minimum standards in Braddon. So yeah, we wanted to try and as I say, maximise the number of units there without actually going to too massive a scale of an apartment block.
And will it eat into the waiting list?
Well, as it happens, the majority of tenants from Cronkbourne have now been relocated or have moved on to either the private sector or other public sector housing. Unfortunately, you know, again, some of them have passed away as well because of, we had quite an elderly demographic down there. So we've got only about a dozen properties left with tenants in. So yes, we will be able to actually offer some of the apartments to people on the waiting list.
Looking at the new properties, what are the remarkable features you've gone for? I notice in the plans, insulation, heat pumps, a lot of consideration for keeping these low energy.
Yes, that was one of the main features that the commissioners wanted. They wanted to make sure that the properties were future-proofed and as sustainable as possible. So we wanted to make sure that they were built to as high a standard as possible in terms of, you know, air tightness and insulation without necessarily going to full passive house standard. And the intention is that the tenants will have to put very little in terms of energy into the properties in the winter to keep them warm. In fact, obviously, with temperatures increasing in the summer, a lot of people are now finding these days it's actually keeping the properties cool in the summer is a bigger issue than heating them in the winter.
It'll join up that sort of vacant green area and what was a difficult place to build, but you're also demolishing some of the old garages.
Yeah, in order to actually make access to the properties, the existing garage blocks will be going. However, as part of the scheme, there will be new parking provided. In fact, it will actually be like two-storey. So where the existing garages are now, there will be another set of garages more or less underneath, or parking spaces, covered parking, underneath the garages. And some of those, there will be provision for charging electric vehicles as well in the future.
And how big of a decision was this to take, considering that it is a £4.5 million investment? And like you said, that'll be a repayable over a 30-year loan.
The island needs housing. There is, you know, a pent-up demand for social housing. The proportion of social housing to the overall number of dwellings on the island has decreased quite dramatically over the last 20-odd years.
The chairman of Braddon Commission is there, Andrew Jessop. Well, that's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast. But for now, Gurumayu, and have a good evening.